This is Weekend Edition from NPR News. I'm John Idstey. Shortly before Scott Simon went on paternity leave, he interviewed novelist Michael Ondaatje about his new novel, Divisadero. Michael Ondaatje, of course, is probably best known for The English Patient, and his new novel has been eagerly awaited. Here's Scott's interview.
The storylines in a Michael Ondaatje novel don't tie things together so much as they allow characters to slingshot in and out of some of the same emotional territory. His new novel seems to be two distinct stories about a couple of California sisters, Anna, Claire, and Coop, the young man who works their farm, the act of unforeseen violence that drives them apart, an unfathomable fortune that gives them each a foot back in each other's lives. And it's the story of Anna going off to France to inhabit the life of a writer of an earlier time. Michael Ondaatje joins us in our studios. Thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you.
What makes this a novel, as opposed to two novellas that share a cover?
Well, I think it's a story where each half reflects the other in some way and hopefully deepens it. You know, it's two novellas are something that are self-sufficient. And in a way, the story of Anna and Claire and Coop and their what happens to them as young people is in a way unfinished. And the only way I felt I could finish it was to kind of imagine another story, partly because that story is told in the kind of consciousness of Anna, I think. And as a result, everything that she doesn't say, everything that she feels, everything that has been unsaid about that relationship and unfinished about that relationship with Coop and her sister and her father as well, gets finished in a kind of another story. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of, it is an odd structure. I'm not forgiving it for that, but... you know, it just seemed to me that a natural way, you know, because I don't think our lives are finished. Our stories are, within our own lives, are not finished. You know, even mid-career or mid-life, you know, you, three-quarters of the things you are still working out are never finished. So one of the things I'm interested in is how one finishes the stories. And one of the ways we finish stories of our own lives is through art.
Did this begin as something you saw? Something was in your mind, something you saw from the road, something in a distance?
Well, what happened was I was teaching at Stanford for one semester, and I was living up in Northern California, north of San Francisco, and a friend had a farm where I could go and work during the day and on my writing. Mm-hmm. And
as opposed to milking the cows or something, and, really useful. Right,
yeah. And I'd never been to this landscape around Petaluma before, and it was just wonderful. And I was in awe of this landscape, and also, you know, I lived on a farm when I was a kid and all that stuff. So then the story really began with these three young people, mm-hmm, who are not fully related by blood, but they are a kind of nuclear family in an odd way.
I want to give people early on an idea of what has been referred to as your sublime and luminous prose. If you could read a section for us.
This is quite early in the book, and this first part is narrated by Anna, who is, in fact, the real daughter of the father. The other daughter has been brought into the family. Now and then our father embraced us, as any father would. This happened only if you were able to catch him in that no-man's land between tiredness and sleep, when he seemed wayward to himself. I joined him on the old covered sofa, and I would lie like a slim dog in his arms, imitating his state of weariness, too much sun, perhaps, or too hard a day's work. Claire would also be there sometimes, if she did not want to be left out, or if there was a storm. But I simply wished to have my face against his checkered shirt and pretend to be asleep, as if inhaling the flesh of an adult was a sin and also a glory, a right in any case. I would watch the flicker under his eyelid, the tremble within that covering skin that signaled his tiredness, as if he were being tugged in mid-river by a rope to some other place. And then I too would sleep, descending into the lair that was closest to him. A father who allows you that should protect you all of your days, I think.
And without giving away any plot points, that feeling is partially at the heart of the act of violence that surprises really all four of the people who get caught up in it.
Yes, later. And you know, there is a kind of huge love that turns into a kind of anger between Anna and the father. And I think that kind of even though his presence is not actively there on all the pages, he's there certainly in memory.
I got to tell you, my favorite sections of this book involve that part of Coop's life. After the act of violence, he runs away from the farm, mm-hmm. and he becomes a card sharp, although perhaps not as sharp as he thinks he is, but accomplished, a good player. How much do you know about gambling and poker? Did you research it?
I do play poker, but I'm not a good poker player. But I did go to Lake Tahoe two or three times when I was writing the book, and I met a group of card players, and they were great people. They were funny, and they were very witty. And I think witnessing how they lived their lives and their strange humor and their knowledge of cards, which was remarkable, mm-hmm. not just in real life, but in fiction. And there's a thing in the book where they're talking about the Cincinnati Kid, anyway, and this one card player said,
There's the movie with Edward G. Robinson and Carl Malden.
That's right, yeah. And Steve McQueen, I think.
Yes.
And then they say, well, that last game he was playing, I think he had aces and tens or something like that. And I went and got the movie out again and looked at it. And, of course, it was aces and tens. So these guys could remember the hand in a movie that they'd seen 25 years ago. And that was such a revealing thing about the focus.
It has been said of your novels that they have a sense of places, the plural, as this book is California, Northern California, and the South of France. You are Sri Lankan-born, British-educated, residing in Canada.
Mm-hmm.
Does this promote a kind of the polyglot geography that's in your books?
Yeah, I mean, I think growing up in, say, three basic places, mostly in Canada now, you're not locked into one specific location. And I sort of envy that one specific location, you know, what Faulkner did and therefore Marquez does and what Alice Munro does. You know, they have their own, what they call their own postage stamp, you know, of a place. And they can write the hell out of that place, you know. And in fact, it's interesting. A few years ago, I went to Oxford, Mississippi, because I love Faulkner. Mm-hmm. And it's nothing like these novels.
Well, there have been a few changes, haven't there?
No, but even so, you know, there's one river and one shack.
I mean, Starbucks has come in for sure.
No, there's nothing. I mean, it's a completely invented landscape, which was thrilling, actually.
You are an accomplished poet as well as novelist. Is there a clear line between the two in your mind?
There is. You know, I think the only problem with that saying that is that people have an image of poets as being this kind of airy-fairy, kind of, you know, overwritten stuff. Mm-hmm. Whereas for me, a poet is the most suggestive and laconic. Every word counts. So a poem also is more suggestive than the average novel. You know, you write three quarters of the story and then the reader provides the last quarter, you know. So I guess my novels have that quality as well, you know, that there are kind of gaps where the connections to be made by the reader.
Michael Ondaatje, thank you very much.
Thank you.
His new novel is Divisadero.
To read an excerpt about the California family featured in Divisadero, go to npr.org/books.